Hey, modern explorers, you're listening to Midland, in our own words, a bi-monthly podcast uncovering Midland County's history as told by you, our community and listeners. Each podcast, we'll introduce never-before-heard stories and tales through personal testimonials and memories passed down through generations. Subscribe to our podcast today to further discover the history of Midland County and send us a note if you have a story you'd like to share. This podcast is part of the Midland County Historical Society's Oral History Project. For more information, please visit midlandcenter.org/oralhistory.
I'm Betty Jones, and I'm here today with Dolores Liebhardt, who is currently the executive director of Adoption Option. Interesting nonprofit in Midland. We're going to be talking about your story today and your journey.
Okay.
But I do want to start with sort of an idea where you came from, how you managed to get to Midland. Why'd you choose Midland? Probably following your husband, right?
It was a Dow Chemical trailing spouse situation. He was finishing up his PhD in chemistry at Indiana University of Bloomington, and I was a lecturer in law at the law school. And when
that
he,
how you met?
Oh no, we met in undergraduate school at the University of Michigan. I met him within a month of arriving on campus. He was a junior, and by God's grace, we were married approximately a month after my graduation. So, because he was a junior, he left campus and graduated and took a job at what was then known as Upjohn in Kalamazoo.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then while he was there, he looked around industry and noticed the ceiling was different for people with bachelor's degrees than people who had PhDs. And after realizing the difference in the ceilings in the chemical industry, actually it was the pharmaceutical industry, he decided he wanted to go back and get his PhD. And he must have done a good job at Upjohn because they gave him a fellowship that enabled him to go to graduate school without being a TA. So it's very rare in the chemistry department that someone is not a teaching fellow.
Yeah.
Or teaching assistant. But he had that Upjohn fellowship, so he didn't have to do that.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Flint.
Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a Michigan girl.
I am, through and through. And he's from Detroit, a graduate of Cass Tech.
Okay.
So we're both local, and we met down there at that University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and sparks flew, and 4 years later we were married.
That's wonderful. And with how many children now?
We have three adult children. My baby girl is in New York City working for a creative company in the HR department. Our only son, our baby girl, our only son, is working for a law firm in D.C. And the name of the firm is Covington.
And you have a grandson.
And he and his lovely wife not only gave us a grandson that's 2 years old, but we also have on the way a little granddaughter. So we can't wait till June to meet her.
Oh my goodness, the perfect family.
Yeah, we're pretty excited.
I guess you are. Eldest
daughter is Jacqueline Janae, who has frankly been instrumental in the development of the nonprofit. She graduated from college and has been helping us ever since. So she's one of the longest serving employees who is passionate about helping children, just like her mom is passionate about helping children. So when it comes to fundraising and friend raising and telling our story and publishing our newsletters and generating our marketing materials, she has been an invaluable part of the team.
Well, we love Jackie. I'm not interviewing her, but we do love her. Yeah. When did you come to Midland?
So it was one of seven companies that offered him a position. And Dow knew that recruiting people to come to Midland, Michigan is definitely a challenge because there are lots of chemical companies in more urban, more diverse, more populated areas. And so they knew that they were not starting at ground zero. So they had a very sophisticated recruiting process. And when they invited him for his plant trip, they planned a trip for the spouse to come along. They had an entire department that was dedicated to the trailing spouse. And so I had a day planned where on the first day we were going to go meet the legal department to just kind of see if that was something I might be interested in long term. And then the second day we were going to go shopping. And that shopping trip never happened because after I met the legal department, they called me back and said, the shopping trip's been canceled. They've scheduled a full day of interviews for you tomorrow. So his was a 2-day interview process. Mm-hmm. And so the first day I was just going to meet the legal department and it didn't work out that way. They scheduled a full day of interviews. Yeah, it worked out.
I'm interested in your first impressions about Midland. You talked about the challenge of recruiting people to come. But what were your first impressions, Laura?
Well, having grown up in Flint, and frankly, my world was so full of so many activities that I didn't even know about that chemical company a few miles down the road. So here we were sitting in Bloomington, Indiana, when he gets an invitation for a plant trip, and neither one of us had heard. You know, he did the campus interview, but neither one of us had had any knowledge or exposure to what Dow Chemical was.
So, you had not actually applied?
Oh, he had applied.
Oh, okay.
He had applied for the PhD interview process that happens on the campus. So they have a career office, and all these chemical companies come to the Indiana University Bloomington career office, and the PhD chemist interview there. And so through that process, seven companies offered him a plant trip, and Dow was one of them.
Oh, okay.
And so we were definitely taking this one, because this was a trip home. When we found out Dow is only an hour away from my parents and 2 hours away from his parents, we were definitely coming on this trip. It certainly did. It certainly did. So my first impressions of Midland were formulated in that interview. He grew up in Detroit. I grew up in Flint. The concept of living in a town that was this size had never crossed our minds. So I remember asking Nancy, her name was Kyle at the time, but now her name is Nancy Camp. I remember asking Nancy, is this a reasonable place to raise children? I mean, are the schools competitive? Because, you know, he grew up at Cass Tech, okay, a magnet school in Detroit. And I went to Flint Power. So education was number one in terms of, you know, picking a place to live. And she said, well, it gave me a good education. I got my law degree from William and Mary. And I was like, okay, all right, then this is going to be all right. So the first impression I got during that interview trip was from Nancy, that this is a safe place to raise children and that they'll get a good education and they'll get a good foundation. And someone else during the interview process mentioned that it's the city of churches. And, you know, we needed to be in a community where we could worship every Sunday and take our children to worship just our parents had taken us. So the second impression was that, you know, this is a place with lots of places to worship.
They probably showed you all that.
Yes, during my tour. Yes, yes.
I know that we got shown all of that.
All of that, yeah. Right.
I think they planned those tours very carefully.
I think they were very strategic. I think they had a lot of experience doing it. And so they had really given it a lot of thought. We came in 1983.
They'd worked it out by then.
Yeah, yeah. He defended his dissertation on a Wednesday. The copies of the dissertation were bound on a Thursday. The movers showed up on a Friday. We drove up on a Saturday and both started work on a Monday.
Following Monday?
The following Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so my next impression of Midland was Sunday morning. It's the first Sunday we've ever spent in this community. We just arrived very late the night before. Dow had a furnished apartment set up for us. But the furnished apartment obviously didn't have any food in it, so it's Sunday and you need to go get breakfast. And we headed out the door to a franchise we were familiar with. I think we went over to Big Boys. And we got there and we discovered, oh my gosh, the entire community has a regimen. They go to church, then they go to Big Boys. Because we got there.
Bob
Evans. And it was just a line out the door of all these people who had just got out of church.
Yeah. And so, nothing to eat.
Yeah, so we found out that the city of churches was a true statement our first weekend in Midland.
What church did you go to that first time?
We ended up visiting a lot of churches before joining Zion Missionary Baptist Church in Saginaw. Okay. And then that worked out really well because I don't know if you realize this, but Reverend Roosevelt Austin sent a son to the University of Michigan where he got his dental degree. And when he arrived on campus, I was a RA in the dorm that he...
So you met him.
I met him while he was a student matriculating at Michigan. So when I told him I'm getting ready to move... No. When I moved to Midland, I had found out about his dad's church in Saginaw because he had told me about that when I was an undergraduate. And so... we ended up joining that church, and that worked really well after the first child. We could still get to Sunday school in Saginaw. But after the second child, getting to Sunday school with two children under 3 years old, just not an option. Not an option. So then we joined First.
It's a bit of fortitude.
We joined First Baptist before... after we had two children, because we just couldn't make that trek any
First
longer.
Baptist in Midland,
yeah. Okay. And subsequently, Faith Ministries was founded, and we became members there.
Yeah,
so.
I thought that you were a member there. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. You worked at Dow.
For a decade, yeah.
Yeah. And why did you quit?
You know, there were a variety of factors. The easiest one to explain is it was a point in my life where I had three children. One was in elementary, and one was in about to go to a middle school. And then there was this baby on the way. So, you know, I had learned a lot at Dow. It was a wonderful opportunity to be in the, to be a transactional lawyer. And then I had spent a half a decade as a litigation attorney. But the litigation lifestyle is not typically a three-parent mommy job. I'll just tell you one story. So once upon a time, there was a little baby born. It's our very first one. And I'm back to work now, and we have someone coming in our home. And you remember the flood of 86. So Jacqueline is not even, you know, she's not even 6 months old. But
you didn't get affected by that flood, though, did you?
We didn't. But the guy who did, whose basement washed out when Sturgeon Creek landed in his basement and on a wall capsized, he was scheduled to go to Spokane, Washington, to manage some litigation for Dow that was going to go to trial. And so with a weekend's notice... here I am with a baby less than 6 months old. They said, we need you to go to Spokane, Washington. I'm like, okay, all right. And so I remember telling my husband, honey, I'll be back by Tuesday. This trial's going to go really fast. Tuesday came.
He was left in charge, I think.
Yes, he was left in charge with a child who was not even 6 months old. And so I call him Tuesday night and say, honey, the trial's running long. I'll be back by Wednesday. And, you know, I call him Wednesday, same story. When I called him on Thursday, he said, don't come back. We don't need you. We have figured this out.
All right. Jackie's going to live.
He said, I know what I'm doing now. You don't even have to come back. And when I came back that Friday night, I still remember Dr. Jones, the look my daughter gave me, like, and who are you? Oh, it's like, what? You decide to grace us with your presence. I mean, Jacqueline has always been a very expressive child. So 93 was a good time. It was a good time. And and I have been blessed by so many people at Dow that I met when I was there. Just so many people, like the legal department was kind enough to contribute to the Northwood University mock trial team's mock trial program. So many times when we'd have a shortfall in funding, I could go to the legal department and they would help out. Jim Fitterling, he has been a kind and generous donor to Adoption Option, mm-hmm. Inc., and so many others. Karen, who is now a vice president at Dow, is on our board at Adoption Option, Inc. She was our board chair.
Karen Carter?
Yeah. Before she went to Houston, she was our board chair. Perry Holman is our current board chair.
Yeah, I knew Perry well.
Yeah, so.
And his wife is involved too, isn't she?
His wife is very involved in the community, and she is a wonderful support person, but she doesn't have an official formal role other than helping us with fundraising and those kinds of things.
Well, there's a gap here, and I want to get that filled in. So you decided that you would resign from Dow because you had children coming on the way. You needed to be home and take care of them. You were going to leave Phil in charge. So how long did you stay home?
I didn't. I didn't stay home. When my departure from Dow happened, I was, funny story, in 92, the director of human resources was Linda Holloman. And she called me one day and she said, Dolores, don't you have a communications degree? And I said, yes. And she said, well, I would like you to interview for one of our communications instructor positions. And I said, okay. She said, we just need, you know, more diversity on our campus. And I think you would be a good role model. And I need you to come interview for this position. So I went to my boss at Dow and I said, do you care if I spend my lunch hour teaching a couple days a week at Northwood? And he's like, it's your lunch hour, do what you want. So in 92, I had become an adjunct at Northwood, and I started out teaching communications, but once they found out I had a law degree, that didn't last very long. They put me in the business law department. So I was already employed at Northwood and at Dow. So when I left and I told the Northwood that I'm available full time, they're like, oh, okay, here's a full time position. And so as soon as Jamaris was born, then I became full time.
Well, you did a lot of things at Northwood, but I think most outstanding is that what you did with
mock trial,
the mock trial.
Oh,
it's a little bit about that.
It's my heart.
I gather that.
You know what is common between Adoption Option and Northwood? What's really common is that young people show up as freshmen with raw talent, and I have the ability to expose them to mock trial where they can grow and develop. And at Adoption Option, we have children in need. And our staff has the ability to help their families who are in need. So the commonality between the two is I just absolutely love helping people. And mock trial is a wonderful way to expose people.
Now, your teams have gotten national recognition, too.
They have, they have. In 2008, they finished runner-up. There are about 600 teams back then. In 2009, they won the national championship. Again, there were 600 teams that started the season only. And in 2010, we had two teams finish in the top 10. Again, with 600 teams starting the season. So your record, your ranking, your national ranking is based on 3 years of past performance.
Oh.
So in 2011, we were the number one ranked team in the country.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. I didn't know
that. And then we have, subsequently, we have on three separate occasions had the runner-up team. And we just finished competition this year where we finished eighth in the Nelmark division.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, Dolores, I have to tell you this. Now, this is my sharing. You know, the Midland paper covers those very nicely. I mean, they always talk about when the Northwood teams win. They do pictures and I never see you in them. Why is that?
Well, when we are talking about the tournaments, it really is about the students' growth. And
I know,
so
but
I'm
also about the advisor.
So someone's got to take that picture. And so typically, I'm the one taking the picture because I want to publish how great these students are, how marvelous their critical thinking skills are, how amazing they were in competition against some of the best schools in the country. So I'm just, you know, proud of them. And I want to take that picture and get it in the paper as soon as possible.
Well, it does get in the paper. And I did notice that you weren't there. I mean, they did mention your name.
Right.
I would say that, but you weren't there.
I was there. I'm behind the camera taking the picture.
Well, you know, you do have Jackie. Jackie takes wonderful
Okay,
pictures.
I have to tell the truth. When I am, when we qualify for championships, if her schedule allows, I invite her to come so I could be in the picture.
Right.
But until championships, it's just about the students. The last tournament of the year, now I want to capture the whole team plus the myself and whoever else is helping us because...
Well, you never know when those pictures are going to become historical documents.
That's true.
And so, you know, how did they get there? I mean, really, advising is very important. If they didn't have someone who pushed them, made them aware when they, you know, in a way that didn't discourage them. But, I mean, I know that this putting together a case is not an easy bit, you know. It's a challenge. So you should let yourself be seen.
At championships, I do get in the picture.
All right. Let me move back a little bit and ask about your experience with the public schools in Midland. Your kids did go to...
Mm-hmm. And my son was blessed to have Miss Janice Wallace as a teacher. I just have... it was a exciting day when I thought my son was going to get a chance to have her. But then he got selected for the gifted and talented class, and that was the year she wasn't teaching it. So he had her for almost a week. Now, Jacqueline, she was blessed to have Mrs. Wallace the entire year. And Jamaris, I believe, had Mrs. Wallace. So I just can't say enough about Cook Elementary or Jefferson Middle School. You know, Ray Fryer was principal
at... Ray Fryer.
Oh, okay. All right. And then at Dow High, they had a lot of great experiences. Were selected for leadership positions and members of the National Honor Society. So my kids had a lot of great experiences in the Midland schools.
Your kids had more than one black teacher.
No, they had. David had one for 1 week. Jacqueline had one for an entire year. And Jamaris had one for an entire year. But that's
they
it.
They did get that experience.
They did get that experience.
Okay. And
which is important not just for black children, but it's important for white children. Because if I'm just saying that having a black teacher broadens the lens of not just the black children who see a role model, mm-hmm. But when you grow up and you leave Midland and you go to New York City or you go to Chicago, you're not so thrown by the fact that the entire population of leadership doesn't always look the same. Mm-hmm. So I think when you don't have Black teachers in the system, you not only do a disservice to the African-American children, but you're not preparing your white children as well as you could for the world of tomorrow. So I think diversity in your school instructional system at the teacher level, at the administration level, is just important for a well-rounded community that's preparing their children to function outside of Midland.
Yeah.
So I really feel strongly about that. And I just hated to see the retirement of teacher after teacher after teacher.
Well, we're hopeful they're going to replace some of those teachers. But I agree with you on that. I really do agree on that. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't think I've talked to any of those teachers who didn't say they were approached many times by white parents.
Mm-hmm.
Who wanted their kids in their class.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I mean, they were good teachers.
Yes.
One thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mrs. Wallace had an incredible reputation for running a highly efficient class. And Barbara Taylor was very well loved at her school. And
Ramona Reed was wonderful.
Was everybody wanted her at Northeast.
Yeah.
So, yes, I hope they have great success at working on that.
Okay, now you can talk about adopt and option. How did you happen to do that?
Oh, God, it's good. You know, there are so many factors that we could spend all afternoon talking about how that happened. So I will give you the quick version, and then maybe we'll have a subsequent interview and we'll go into further detail. But the bottom line is I had reached the point where my three children were in different schools now. It wasn't, you know, two little elementary school children and a baby being born. Moved down the road several years, and now you've got one in elementary school, one in middle school, and one in high school. So you can do the math. There are, what, seven teachers in the high school and another six teachers in the middle school. And then you have, you know, French in the elementary as well as band as well as the classroom teacher. So you got another three or four teachers at elementary. And then at that time in Midland, they hadn't reached the point where they kept the schedules the same. So this child might have a day off this week and this child might have a day off that week. So I'm keeping track of three schedules, multiple teachers. And I just, I don't know if you remember the Texan. The Texan, the restaurant Midland.
Yes.
So I said, honey, let's have breakfast at the Texan. I need to talk to you about something. And he had no clue that when we sat at the Texan, I said, sweetheart, right now I'm acting as a public defender. I'm teaching at Northwood. By this time I was no longer an adjunct. I was three-quarter time. So I was classified as a part of their full-time staff. And I am trying to do my very best to be in communication with teachers at three schools, like, you know, 14 of them. And it's just getting to be a bit much. And I think I hear God calling me to start an adoption agency. And my lovely, wonderful husband said, well, God hasn't told me about that. 'Cause he had a very thriving career at Dow Chemical at the time, mm-hmm. had leadership responsibilities, global leadership responsibilities. And we talked it through, and he said, well, you know, if that's what God's telling you, you got to do it. We'll see how this all works out, because my husband's analytical. You know that. He has a PhD in chemistry. So his questions were things like, have you done market research? And I'm like, no, I just think I hear God's voice. And he's like, well, have you found a market niche that you've identified? No. Well, have you drafted a business plan? No, I just think God's telling me to do this. And he's like, oh, Okay, so he kept asking multiple intelligent questions that reflected his management training at Dow Chemical, and I kept just saying, sorry, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, communication is about discovery, isn't it?
And I got to give him credit that although analytically I couldn't provide him with any comfort, he walked in faith, and together we have walked in faith. Normally, in nonprofits, you typically don't start with a spouse on the board, but I knew that he was a PhD chemist who managed a budget at that time that was $6 million. And I knew that, you know, by Dow standards, that's not significant, but for an organization that was starting with faith, do you hear me? Mrs. Austin was added, Pastor Roosevelt Austin, I asked him to be on the board. And he said, oh, you want my wife? She's on the board of directors of Saginaw County DHS. I was like, okay. So she was my main prayer warrior. So she opened the first board meeting in prayer. Laura Patterson, who was in auditing at Dow. Hazel Jones, who was, you know, in finance at Dow. And Theophilus and...
Another. They had faith in you. You're a survivor.
And Tina Luddington, who was in marketing at Dow. So, you know, I had people who were going to help me pray and who were going to share their expertise. But, you know, I didn't go to them and say, you know, in order to be on this board, you need to give $1,000 because we need seed capital. We didn't have any capital. I said, you know, I think God's calling me and will you help me? And they said, yes. That was my first board, and we incorporated in 2003, April of 2003, and then I set about writing the policies and procedures, and I filed them with the government, and the government looked at the policies and procedures and said, this is a good start, come on over and we'll talk about what you've drafted. And by April of the following year, we now had our license to operate. And you're probably wondering, okay, so now you have a license to operate, that requires capital. What are you going to do? And the answer is I had a functioning law firm I was no longer a public defender. I was now a sole proprietor. And I used the surplus revenue from the law firm to fund adoption option until it grew legs. And the very first check I'll never forget was the very first check we received from a client. She was adopting internationally. We didn't do international, but she lived in Michigan and she needed a Michigan home study. So I hired by contract a social worker to do her home study. And I said, this is our very first home study. So what do you want to charge? Because whatever you tell me, that's what I'm going to charge her. I'm not charging a penny extra because this is our first one and we just want to do it right. And he said, I'm going to charge you $250 back then. And I charged her $250, added $300 worth of family revenue. And I say family revenue. His mom would write us checks. Happy anniversary. Happy birthday.
All of that.
And we had these checks that, you know, back then you had to go to the bank to deposit them, right? And nobody had time to go to the bank. We had three kids. So these checks were kind of, you know, accumulating. And I took those checks and threw some cash from my purse. And
it was still good.
Mm-hmm. And the first deposit was $550. And it was in September. Remember, we incorporated in April.
Yeah.
So the law firm paid all the bills of the adoption option until September of 2004 when it had its first, its first revenue. So this has just been a venture in faith. God has just provided and
That's
provided.
A wonderful story.
And provide it.
Now, who knew all that was going on? No, I mean, really, who knew all of that was going on? We just saw the results. I mean, you know, and I just figured that you started a new agency. And I remember when you got, when Adoption Option got adopted by United Way.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing. But you had contracts before then, too.
Oh, well. What happens with United Way is we are not a United Way partner, but we are, if someone donates to United Way, because we have a 501c3 tax exempt status, then I just deposited a United Way check today. Someone who donated money to United Way designated it for our agency. So although we're not a partner, when anyone donates to United Way and says, I designate this for adoption option, then they send us a check.
Well, what is the difference? I mean, they fund other agencies. What's different if you're a partner?
A partner means you get funding from them on an annual basis. We get funding from them if a donor says, I earmark this donation for adoption option.
Well, and you ought to let people know that. Well, really, because we donate to United Way. I mean, really, we're very generous donors to United Way, but I never thought of, you know, saying or expressing a preference for where the money would go.
Right. But then they sometimes have programs where people who aren't their partners can apply. So, for example, when the flood hit, we needed computers because suddenly after COVID you had to disperse people into their homes. So we had desktops that were being used by, you know, four or five people in a day. The same desktop, somebody might use it in the morning, and somebody else at lunchtime, and somebody else in the afternoon, and somebody in the evening. Well, that wouldn't work once you had to send everybody home. So we applied for a grant through the Midland Area Community Foundation, and part of the funding was through United Way. So when we can apply.
The foundation also now has this day of giving.
Yes.
Yeah, and I noticed that your agency sends out cards.
Yes, about the day of giving, yes.
Is that productive?
Yes, we have been very blessed. It's interesting. I knew what an endowment was. I was aware of the value of an endowment, but until Give Local Midland started, it was on the list of things to do. And that year, we created a $5,000 endowment. And since that time, that endowment has grown to in excess of $50,000. So donors have been
growing.
Yes, yes. Donors have been very generous in helping us grow that fund so that it contributes to our sustainability.
Mm-hmm. You also have a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fundraiser.
Jambalaya and Jazz
Jambalaya.
It's our biggest event. Last year we did it virtually. We had a professional chef who has widely traveled come and demonstrate on camera how to make jambalaya. As you know, that wasn't quite as much fun as being there in person and eating the jambalaya. But I was in the studio when he cooked it, and I tasted it, and it was wonderful. So, yes, we were very, very blessed that Chef Andy joined us last year. And then Kelly Osborne did a dish involving comfort food, a corn casserole, and that was wonderful, too. So it wasn't quite the same as the event you love, where we could go around tasting food. But
you could dress up too.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah. It's a wonderful event, and we look forward to the day when we can all get back in person.
Well, yes, Lord, this is a walk of faith too. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the experience of your children in school, aside from the teachers you've mentioned.
I have to tell you that Nancy was right. The education was second to none in terms of what goes on in the classroom. In terms of extracurriculars, this town has an amazing quantity. All of my children did Battle of the Books. All of my children, had the activities in sports. And all of my children, by God's grace, have at least one college degree. So they had a very good, solid academic foundation.
So your values relating to education were met?
Yes. My expectations, that was my fear when I sat there in that interview, that if we come to this smaller community than he or I had ever lived in, would my children be able to compete at the University of Michigan? Mm-hmm. Would they be able to graduate? Because we were there in the 70s. He came in 73, I came in 75. And we saw those kids that came from places that didn't prepare them to compete at that level. And we saw them and we met them and we developed relationships with them. And then after Christmas, they didn't come back.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was something I had a lived experience with. So that was one of the first questions I asked in the interview is are my kids going to be okay if I spend a couple decades here? And the answer is they were.
Because Michigan is a special environment, you know. I mean, I admit to being biased, but Ann Arbor is a special kind of environment.
Right. Yeah. But they were prepared. I mean, when... Mrs. Rao selected one of my children as editor-in-chief of the Dow High newspaper, I never envisioned that that would be a privilege that would lead to him being granted a scholarship. Dow sets up a scholarship, one for the editor-in-chief of Midland High and one for the editor-in-chief of the Dow High newspaper, mm-hmm. and sent him to the Medill School of Journalism. And at the Medill School of Journalism, he met the guy who wrote the series of articles that resulted in the moratorium on the death penalty in Illinois. And as he went through the death penalty files, he thought, if I become a lawyer, I can become somebody who does something about that.
Started in communication and wound up in law.
Yeah. And so, you know, those are opportunities that he got to take advantage of because of that. And then when he went to NYU for law school, he ended up, by God's grace, being selected as editor-in-chief of the Law Review. So, you know, the education they got here gave them fundamentals. Jacqueline finished her undergraduate degree in 3.5 years. So the education they got here, Jamaris finished her degree from Albion, which won't let you graduate unless you pass a writing test. Now, how many colleges still do that, a writing test as a part
of it? Oh, we had to do that.
Yeah, but how many colleges still do it?
Oh, I don't know. I assume that they did.
No, that's very rare. And so I do have to be clear that the educational opportunities in this community, and this was all before they even had the IB program. And then while Jamaris was in college, she came back and did an internship with the Chamber of Commerce. So there are just so many opportunities in this community. Jacqueline has been very active in the Chamber and been involved with Rotary. And of course, you know, there's sororities, your sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha, my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta. You know,
I think the sororities have contributed a great deal.
I do agree. Yeah. I do agree.
Yeah. We had fraternities, but there was only one that had enough to have a chapter
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them sort of, you know,
regionally.
Gravitated to the
regional.
Mm-hmm. So, and of course, their main activities took place in Saginaw, so I don't know that our kids really got the full brunt of that.
Mm.
But
now they have a Jack and Jill here. So
what
a blessing, you know, the opportunity to meet young people from around the U.S.
Yeah, and the leadership is right here in town.
Uh-huh, that's wonderful. I'm so proud that has been established. That would have been a great asset to have when my children were growing up.
I was going to ask a question about the arts because that's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
What is your impression of the arts here in Midland, the opportunities in the arts?
Terry Trotter does an amazing job. She is just always looking for opportunities to diversify the offerings of the Midland Center for the Arts. We really enjoyed the first time we saw the Dance Theater of Harlem here. We saw the group that came from Memphis. What was the name of the group?
I don't know, but it was the dance group, right?
Yes, yes. That was an amazing So the arts is incredible for this size town. The number of plays, the Matrix Midland, the Whiting Forest, the Dow Gardens, the arts in this community are just way beyond what a town our size typically has.
That is the truth.
The D-Jam band playing at the Saints and Sinners Lounge or whatever the current name is just, you know, those are things that you don't normally get in a town this size. Mm-hmm. So it's just a delight to have such resources locally.
Grow over the years in terms of the offerings.
Right.
I mean, they started with the symphony and I think a music society. But I have been impressed too with the diversity of what they've been able to bring in.
Right, I saw the Temptations right here in this building.
Yes, I know. We saw them. Oh. Well, now, do you have any special comments that you want to make that were just burning?
No,
that I haven't asked.
I think you are an amazing leader. You have done an amazing job of intentionally collecting a variety of stories. And that is a donation that will live long after you do. So I'm really grateful that you selected me and invited me. And
well, Dolores, you're part of the history. You didn't know that.
A very small part.
You know, my last question was, if you had all this to do over, would you do it again? But I think I heard it already. But anyway, comment on that.
That was a hard question for me because I thought about all the assets and benefits and values of living here. And I thought about, you know, there are some detriments, some challenges. And so I had to really do some. That was the hardest question you asked me, but the answer is yes. I would have made some different choices in terms of increasing my children's exposure to diversity. That required more affirmative effort than I believe I undertook. And so when I looked back on that, you know, you gave me the question of would I live here? Well, you know, you could just live somewhere else and you didn't have to work so hard to increase their exposure to diversity. But on balance, I think the hard skills, the soft skills, the myriad of opportunities, the church home, those wonderful role models in the church means I would do it again. I would do it again. Yep.
It's interesting to reflect back on that because as you have matured, you might not make the same decision you made when you were younger.
Right.
You know, because you know more. But that's good to know. That's very good to know.
How about you? Would you do it again?
We're kind of conflicted about that. We're not sure. Well, it was fine for us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're both working parents,
mm-hmm.
and our careers flowered.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure about what happened with our two sons
mm-hmm.
in the Midland schools. They had to do what they were going to do afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have talked with and interviewed Black kids who, in that first generation, particularly I think the first generation, I don't know that others felt it's the same way, but they took a lot of harassment, you know, mm-hmm. because they were first and because they looked different and because people wondered, you know, did they bathe this morning or whatever,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
without realizing that your color is simply different.
The melanin doesn't come off in the wintertime.
So, you know, you don't know how much damage those things did. I mean, they both are fine, and we love them, and they seem to be healthy.
Yes.
But I don't know if I would have accorded that to Alta Midland School. You know, I think we worked hard at that, too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And yeah. That was the thing, is that, you know, when my kids were in elementary school, you know, we'd get an invitation to a 2 in the afternoon recital for your kids in second grade. And you're like, 2 p.m. on a workday?
Right.
Okay, I'll just structure some vacation time. And you get there, and there the entire parking lot has not a single space, and the school has gotten special permission so that you can park on the streets in places you're normally not allowed to park. That level of parent engagement, it creates an environment that says parents care, so teachers care, so principals care, so everybody cares.
Well, that was one of the differences I think that we observed early, and was particularly if you were a Black woman, that your life was different than the majority of women in the city, mm-hmm. because they did not work.
Right.
And I understood that that was specified, that sometimes they were not allowed to work.
That's interesting you should say that, because yeah. I remember Sylvia Ryans, God rest her soul. Do you remember her?
I do.
I met her when she was like 9 months pregnant. And I said, how is that working out, working and being pregnant? And she said, oh, it's not working out. My employer told me I wasn't allowed to work after the 5th month because it made him uncomfortable. Maybe. I was like, okay.
But you know, that's what I mean.
Did he know about the 1978 Pregnancy Discrimination Act? Did somebody tell him about that?
Evidently not.
Apparently that Supreme Court decision escaped him. So I remember when she told me that, I was just floored. In fact, I was so floored that when I was expecting my first child, I'm sure you have probably heard of the rubber band trick. I used the rubber band trick and I walked in there as pregnant as all get out without any maternity clothes until like, I don't know, my 6th or 7th month. And it got to the point where the ladies in the office, the female secretaries, would say to me, is there something you want to share? And I'm like, no. And my face was real clear that this conversation was now done, that they had asked their question, they had gotten their answer, and we were not going to talk about this anymore. And so finally, after Sylvia's experience, I was just afraid to tell my employer that he would no longer take me serious as an attorney in the litigation section.
Yeah.
So I put it off as long as I could. And finally, when the rubber bands weren't big enough and I had to go buy maternity clothes, I sat him down and told him that I was expecting. He said, well, we don't know if you're coming back. And I was like, I already told you I'm coming back. And he was like, well, you know, you might change your mind. So, yeah, I remember those days where this community had a rhythm and it did not involve working women. But that has changed. That has changed
somehow,
markedly over the years.
I'm interviewing Nancy Barker, and she talked about that at Northwood. That she was not allowed to work at first with her first marriage because there was a belief that it would reflect on the husband's ability to support her.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, and it was interesting because when I came, they would have these morning coffees, and I was really not used to morning coffee, you know, going to somebody's house for coffee. But I learned a lot before I started work. And these are really bright, educated women.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, well, you know, why aren't you using it? But they were not allowed to. That's why Midland has such wonderful things. I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. That's the secret of all the Midland advantages. They were started by volunteer women
mm-hmm.
who didn't have the opportunity to work for pay. But I tell you, they really have given us a wonderful community. That's true.
That's true. That's
very true. So we should stay grateful to them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very much so.
Well, thank you for this interview, Dolores. This is really wonderful. I'm happy to have shared your story. And it's going to be videotaped, so they'll see you and all your expressions. So thank you very much for being here, really. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Midland in Our Own Words. This podcast is produced by Tridge Media Productions. To find out more about Tridge Media Productions or contact us, please visit www.tridgemediaproductions.com.